All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It's the Tornado Tony Panica.
And Psychic Tom Padgett with his crystal ball polished up.
Good, because I'm going to test on that crystal ball tonight, Tom.
I'm ready tonight, my brother. Ready to go.
All right.
Well, Tony's must be in a good mood because we got so much boxing to talk about tonight since there's no MMA until the middle of May here. And I'm a poet, didn't know it. But, yeah, I actually did, you know, what kind of boxing fan would I be if I didn't watch the big fight over the weekend? Watch the whole damn thing, and that was pretty interesting. It's kind of a weird style by Klitschko. I mean, I haven't watched a shitload of his fights, so I don't really have the experience to fall back on and say that, you know, it was a lot different than what he's used to, but he once again is an example of a white guy using the up jab that's not very effective from my experience. He had his hand, left hand really low for a lot of the fight, and he was kind of a little bit spasmodic with his hands there, Klitschko. He just didn't seem to have a real rhythm and a kind of confidence that Joshua has, even though Joshua had his weak moments too. But it was a heck of a fight. I mean, he really showed a lot of heart. He really showed that he's still competitive at his age. But that style, I mean, he's just got to go. He's got to do something different if he wants to compete. I thought he was doing his best when he was throwing a lot of one-twos, just straight punches. And instead of coming from nine different areas with that jab, he should have been coming right from his shoulder. And, you know, Joshua pretty much did exactly what I always suggest, keeping one hand always up by the face. So he did a lot better defensively, I thought. But what a back and forth with the knockdowns. That was incredible. And I know I've asked Tony about this, whether it's legal or not. Throwing a back fist in boxing. Did you notice Klitschko did that?
That is illegal.
Did you notice?
Right. That is illegal. A couple times he did that.
Yes, he did. I was like, ref didn't say anything. So what's that all about?
Here's what I took away from the fight. When I was pressed on, you know, my prediction over the last few weeks, I kept in my mind seeing a Klitschko, and I'm going to say I might have got the winner right, but not the way that he won. I going into the fight was thinking of Klitschko's fight with Tyson Fury when it looked like King Kong and Godzilla were playing ballerina. And wanted to make boxing into you know, less of a contact sport than chess. Klitschko in that fight landed four punches a round. 48 total, or 52 total punches over 12 rounds when he fought Tyson Fury. And then I was thinking of some of his other fights, especially recently. His fight, Brian Jennings out of Philadelphia, when he really struggled. Jennings gave him a good scrap, despite being outweighed by like 30 pounds almost. So I was like, maybe Klitschko doesn't want anymore. He's 41 years old now. Maybe the time has passed, and this young lion is going to exploit, you know his chin, and he's really going to take it to Klitschko. I had the winner right, but Klitschko came to fight. He came in great shape. So in the first few rounds, you know, they were both kind of feeling each other out, and Klitschko was actually a little bit more aggressive, which threw me off. I said, wait a minute, he's coming to fight a little bit. But he was really holding his left hand on. My dad said, like, man, he can get caught with a right hand doing that. The announcers had predicted that, and very accurately, as the fight wore on, if Klitschko tried to lean in, it could be the uppercut that spells his doom. So, watching the fights, I had predicted Joshua to take him out sometime in the mid-rounds, like round five. So we're watching the fight, and, you know, first four rounds were about even. And then, you know, Joshua bombs him in the fifth round, and Klitschko goes down hard, face first, gets up, he's cut. And I said, Dad, fifth round. You know, this fight's all but over. But then Joshua threw a few more punches, and he started, like, really breathing hard. And I'm like, he looks like he's gassed. Next thing you know, Klitschko starts landing some shots, and I'm like, oh, shit, he's coming back to fight hard. and then Klitschko had him down in the sixth round. Another thing my dad said is, like, Klitschko lands his beautiful right hand right on Joshua's ear, knocks his equilibrium off, and he had, like, a delayed reaction on his way down, and Klitschko just clipped him with a left hook on the way down, like, almost on the side of the head. My dad made the statement that if Klitschko would have fired another right hand, he probably would have caught him right on the button and maybe knocked him out.
Right.
Joshua got up. Klitschko was winning, like, those next so many rounds. And then, you know, Joshua started coming back a little bit, and then all of a sudden, the 11th, he exploded. Boom. That uppercut was, you know, reminded me of the time Mike Tyson hit Jose Ribalta with that uppercut. back in, like, 85 or 86. And I think the worst thing that happened for Klitschko there is he did not immediately go down.
Yeah.
Because he took four more punches before he went down, and you could see when he tried to grab the ropes, he, like, basically missed them at first and really had a hard time getting up. The final volley for the stoppage may have been a little bit premature, but in that situation, always better to be safe than sorry, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now, here's where my boxing Rain Man ism comes into play. And funny how things work out. The night before, that Friday night, you know, I fell asleep, whatever time, around 4 in the morning, a thunderstorm came through our area that literally was, like, rumbling the house.
Huh.
You know, it felt like lightning hit the house at one point. So, you know, I wake up, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. So as I wake up, I pick up my phone, I look on Facebook, because that's what I do, and I see Amy, my one trainee, she's right over there, Jesus Christ, what a thunderstorm. Everybody else, what a storm, my God, it's waking us all up. And I'm like, yeah, no shit, Captain Obvious.
Uh-huh.
But then it had a clip of a fight, and that fight was April 29th, 2000, 17 years to the day. And it was Lennox Lewis and Michael Grant. Michael Grant, tremendous athlete, was an undefeated fighter. And I'm going to tie all this together in a minute.
Huh.
A tremendous fighter. And when he went in there against Lennox Lewis, Lewis bombed him out in two rounds. And Grant never really recovered from that. But I watched that fight on replay at 4 in the morning while we're in the middle of this thunder and lightning storm. Now, after the fight was over, I go to Italian dinner that night with that gentleman, Hank Cisco, that I was on his show a couple times. He used to train with Marciano. And he was, like, he was a referee and knows a lot of guys. So we're at the Italian dinner, and a couple of members of his family, they were going to a different after party. And since I wasn't drinking, they asked if I would drive him home. I said, yeah, I'll drive Hank home. So it was only a couple miles from where we were. I drive him home, and he's like, hey, I want to show you some of my memorabilia. And he showed me his office. And he had, like, some fight posters in there and some different stuff when he was a police officer and all that. And what do I see hanging is the backstage credentials for Lennox Lewis versus Michael Grant.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I was there with Grant that night. I was one of his backers. I'm like, oh, shit. What a coincidence, 17 years to the day. Now, the reason I'm going to tie all this together was the fight before the Lewis-Grant fight. Grant was fighting in Atlantic City against crazy Andrew Galata. And this was the fight that got him the number one contendership and the shot at the title. Now, Galata in the first round, okay, no denying Galata had skills. He just did not have the mental makeup to be a fighter, to be honest. Well, Galata caught Grant with the right hand. Boom, and he put him down, first time in his career. Then he put him down again, hard. And it's like, oh, shit. And then, you know, Grant was hurt pretty bad. He came back, and he was able to win that fight by knockout. Here's how I tie it all in. Joshua, tremendous athlete, like Grant was. I think Joshua's more of a natural fighter, maybe. He definitely has more amateur experience. But what's going to happen, because this is the time he was down, and he was,
you broke up there, Tony. What are you saying?
Well, you guys, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I can now.
I think some spam number tried to call me. That's why I was like, I I ain't touching this thing. Okay, good. So, back to Michael Graham. You know, Joshua goes down in this fight, first time he's ever down, and he was legitimately hurt. He was hurt pretty good, right? So now, Grant in his next fight gets blown out by Lennox Lewis, basically goes down from the first punch that lands. I want to see what happens to Joshua when he steps up against another top contender, another elite fighter, how he's going to react. Because even though Grant won that fight with Galata, you could tell that his mental makeup was basically damaged. You know, he knew that he was vulnerable. And Lewis jumped on him like a shark. And now, is something like that going to happen to Joshua? Is he going to go in there coming off the biggest win of his career, but saying, wait a minute, I'm vulnerable, and have that doubt in his mind whenever he gets hit?
Very good point. That's a very good point, because Joshua had been untouchable.
Yeah, really? And, you know, and I was talking to some gentlemen at the gym tonight, you know, having our usual boxing talks, and that was the one guy we were talking about. He goes, that was the best heavyweight fight I've seen in about a good at least 10 years. I mean, even longer
than
that.
That is really sad. Wow.
But he goes, you know, this could be the fight that helps, you know, bring the heavyweights back to prominence. You know, how it could be, right? But then the other thing, you know, we came out and said, he goes, you know, if, say, Joshua goes in there to fight a guy like, Deontay Wilder. You know, and Wilder is going to come out there swinging wild. You know, could he shell shock him?
It's possible. I think
it's a better fight
than Klitschko.
It's going to be interesting, for sure.
I don't know if you guys saw, though, there was one fan in the audience that was actually was loud enough. He was giving Klitschko a real hard time. Did you guys see that at all?
I did not.
Let me play the clip.
I didn't even notice that.
See if I can get it here. Find it. Boy, this isn't working. Fucking me up here, computer. I'm trying to do something besides the freeze on me. Here it is. I got no sound. What the heck? No, I got no sound. Anyway, I was going to make a joke about Shannon Briggs, where he's yelling, "Let's go, champ! Let's go, champ!" apparently, my audio isn't working on the net here. I don't know what's going on. Let's go, champ! It made me think when I was getting that clip ready. I'd like to see Shannon Briggs try to eat Anthony Joshua's salad at lunch. Try to go and
steal
his bowl away from
him. Chance for the right payday.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
He does have another fight coming up. It's not a championship fight, but pretty interesting that he's still in the mix there. And he's eating healthy too. He's got one YouTube video where he's got just a absolute shitload of mangoes and fruits and blueberries and all kinds of good stuff that he's making into a shake, and he's singing about Klitschko all the time. He's even got a hat that says "Let's go, champ." So now it's a different champ. He's gonna have to stalk Joshua if he won that fight. That's funny.
And you know what? I don't know if he does.
I don't know if he does either.
Yeah, I don't think a good smoothie's gonna make up for where he's at in his career.
Right.
A little late in the game.
Yeah.
And there's another one here. It's a pretty crazy situation. I don't know how this happened, but we got some results from last week. Travis Fulton is. He's one of the guys who's got probably is the guy who has the most mixed martial arts fights in history.
The Iron Man.
He's got like 300 fights. Like, he just wakes up. Sorry about that, folks. Say that again, Tom. We lost it, and...
He has a pro boxing record as well.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about here. Tony loves to tell his story about cutting weight and, what is it, 7 different weight classes in one semester or something?
Oh, come on. It's not exaggerated. Only 5.
Oh, sorry. Ty Cobb. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. I know everybody's probably heard of Ty Cobb, the baseball player, but Ty Cobb, the boxer. Now, pretty sure he's a heavyweight, right? A what? Lost you there.
I said I knew Tex Cobb. Never heard of Ty.
Ty Cobb. Okay, he's heavyweight, I believe. 19-8 is his record, okay? So they've got Memorial Hall, Kansas City, Kansas, as the venue. This is on BoxRec from 4/29, April 29th, which is the same day as the Klitschko-Joshua fight. And the main event, okay, super lightweight, Ty Cobb, 19-8, versus Travis Fulton, who I don't believe is a super lightweight. So I don't know if they got the weight wrong or the name wrong, but... Travis Fulton came in at 24-44-1, got knocked out by Ty Cobb there. But they, right under the super lightweight Ty Cobb, they have the heavyweight Ty Cobb fighting on the same card, different opponent. Richard Carmack in that fight, 15-10-1. So was this a tournament? Did he have to cut that much weight?
I can't imagine trying to in the 130s. I mean,
super lightweight, yeah.
I don't know, I'd like to see what he looked like.
I don't know, I'm gonna have to research this and find out what the hell's going on here, because Travis Fulton also fought again, so maybe it was a tournament, because he's down at heavyweight, yeah, so they definitely screwed up the super lightweight rank, I mean the weights, but maybe this was a tournament, because he's also way down on the card fighting Lance Gouch, who he won by won the fight by majority decision. Lance Gouch was 8-11-2 going into that one. So I guess these guys both fought on the same night, but I'm definitely gonna have to research this, because I didn't hear anything about this twice on the same night. And then you thought Travis Fulton was bad already. But that's not even the craziest story from last week's results, because you know how we always talk about fights where somebody's O has got to go?
Yep.
A couple fights above the Klitschko fight, there was a fight in Andalusia, Spain, between Alvaro Torero and Albert Ulrich. So a couple Al's. One Al's record, Torero, was 0-7-1. The other Al was 0-21-0.
Damn.
Wow.
Guess who lost?
the 0-7-0 guy lost.
Nope. He won. He got his first win.
Yeah.
Ninth fight, first win.
I was just hoping for the guy. So now he's 0-22-1?
Yeah.
Say
yeah.
One draw?
Catch 22. No, 0-21-0. So 0-22-0 now.
0-22-0. Not one draw. Is that on YouTube, I wonder? if it is, me and Tony will be expecting a link, Rich.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to see this guy's style and see what he looks like. And then, I mean, it's the kind of guy I wish I knew him as outside of fighting. Ask him as a friend, you know, where are we going here?
He
can't be making much money at it, I wouldn't think.
And Christian Leight also fought as well. He got another loss. He got his 247th loss over there in the United Kingdom. 12 wins, 246 losses going into 8 draws. He lost to a guy, Teon Gibbs, who's only 2-0 at welterweight. So,
you know, it would be interesting to get that guy on.
Christian?
On our show.
Well, we got to get Travis Fulton on first.
Travis Fulton. Yeah, I could talk to him about the night, and I talked to him about the King of the Cage. You know, in Indiana. I mean, that guy's... I talked to him about when he slammed the Taekwondo guy down, finished his career. There's all kinds of stuff. I would just like to, just very respectfully ask him, how do you come back from all that, those defeats? I mean, it would be so hard to keep your mindset right, I think. I don't know. I mean, maybe you guys know more about than I would, but God, I mean, over 200 losses and you've only got 12 wins?
Right. Unbelievable. Also on the Joshua Klitschko undercard, we had featherweights Scott Quigg and Viral Simeon. Both of them had one loss going in. Quigg got the win there. He goes to 33-1-2. Simon falls to 21-2. That was a unanimous decision for Quigg. And then lightweights, Luke Campbell, only 16-1 going against a very experienced Darlys Perez, who came in at 33-2-2. And Luke got the TKO win in that one. Doesn't say the round right here on BoxRec, but pretty good stuff there. And that was pretty much the best stuff for last week. Definitely going to have to find out what's going on with that Ty Cobb situation. Oh, there is one other one that we were talking about last week. From Las Vegas, Claudio Marrero got the win by knockout over Carlos Zambrano, handing him his first loss of his career. He was 26-0 going in. Now he's 26-1. Marrero goes up to 22-1-0, and that was for the interim WBA World Featherweight title and the vacant IBO Featherweight title. Also, Nathaniel Gallimore at middleweight, 17-1-1, goes to 18-1-1. Beat Jason Rosario, who was undefeated before the fight, at 12-0. Now he's 12-1, and that was a TKO win for Gallimore. Also, Ronald Gavril winning at super middleweight, goes to 18-1, beating DeCarlo Perez, who was 16-5-1 going in. That was a TKO as well. And unfortunately, Jesus got TKO'd as well. Jesus Gutierrez, 14-1-1 going in. He got beat by Ladarius Miller, who gets the lucky 13th win of his career. 13-1 is his record now. And the newest acquisition for Mayweather Promotions got her big win under that banner, her first big win there with them. 38 wins going in. Now she's 39 wins, one win away from 40. Go with 13 losses and 5 draws. She beats Sylvia Sabados, who came in at 16-9, and takes her 10th loss. And, of course, we got the big Cinco de Mayo fight weekend coming up this weekend. But we've also got to talk about Friday's fights as well, I believe. Friday tomorrow night. Friday the 5th. It's actually Cinco de Mayo tomorrow, but the big fight's going to be the 6th. Canelo Alvarez versus Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. But Friday, I do believe Uriokas Gamboa is fighting somewhere. I can find it here. That's the big one there. Also, over in Russia, we got a bunch of titles on the line. Right down the list. This is a great card for Russia. I mean, a lot of hard-to-pronounce names, but good records. A lot of undefeated guys on this record, on this card. The lightweights, Rustam Nugayev, 29-7-1, fighting Danier Berio, who is 19-0-1 there. Then we got super featherweights Shavkat Rakhimov, who's 9-0, fighting Jimmy Papa, who is 19-3-1. Those aren't for titles, but then we get into the title fights. At super bantamweight, we've got Evgeny Gradovich, who is 22-2-1, fighting Hugo Berio, who is 23-6-1 for the WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. Then we've got Magomed Kurbanov, who is 10-0, fighting Virgilijus Stapulionis, who is 27-4-1. That one's for the WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight title. Then we got Evgeny Chuprakov, who is 17-0, fighting Eden Sonsona, who is 36-6-2. And that's for the WBO Intercontinental Super Featherweight title. And we got a couple other ones here for title super featherweights. Mikhail Alexiev, 9-0, fighting Salvador Braseno, who is 8-1. And Yuri Kashinsky, 11-0, fighting Valery Brudov, who is 44-11 for the WBO Oriental Cruiserweight title. That's about it there. IBF Youth Middleweight title on the line in the UK over in Leeds. Middleweights Reese Cartwright, 16-0, fighting Jan Meiser, who is 13-0-1 there. Pretty good fight. And here it is from Las Vegas at the Cosmopolitan, one of my favorite places to watch a fight. We also got the Jesus Fight of the Week coming to us from there. But the lightweight main event is Yuriorkis Gamboa, 26-1, fighting Robinson Castellanos, who is 23-12. So a little bit of an experience battle there for Gamboa. Can't really call it a tune-up fight with a guy who's got more wins than losses, but it's definitely not stepping up in competition for Gamboa. I think he's fought a lot, got better guys than this. But co-main event, Abraham Lopez, 22-0-1, fighting Jesus M. Rojas, who is 24-1-2. Lopez is 22-0-1. That's for the WBA and ABA featherweight title. Also on the line, also on the card, featherweights Horacio Garcia, 31-2-1, fighting Fernando Vargas, who is 32-11-3. And we got middleweights. Somebody's always got to go in a good way here. Yamaguchi Falco, who is 12-0, fighting Morgan Fitch, who's 18-0-1. So somebody's got to take a loss there. This is a tie. And that's it for Friday. Let's go to Saturday. Argentina, we got the WBO Latino featherweight title on the line between Diego Ricardo Santillan, who is 23-1, and Matias Carlos Adrian Rueda, who is 27-1. That's pretty much the best fight there. Boxrec. Stop trying to sell me stuff, Boxrec, that I don't want. WBC World Female Super Featherweight title on the line from Finland, of all places. Eva Wallström coming in at 19-0-1 against Myra Alejandra Gomez, who is 18-5 there. Also, co-main event lightweights Edith Tatley, who is 29-1, versus Francesco Patera, who is 17-2. That one's for the EBU lightweight title. We got Roman Golovashenko, 17-1, fighting Kai Kurzawa, who is 37-5 over there in Sachsen, Germany at cruiserweight. It's for the vacant IBO Intercontinental Cruiserweight title there. Over in New Zealand, Joseph Parker, big heavyweight undefeated fighter there. I believe he's coming from the world of rugby, if I remember correctly. Coming in at 22-0, fighting Razvan Kojanu, who is 16-2. Another guy who's probably going to try to get into the title picture one of these days, Joseph Parker. Hasn't fought any like real big-time world beaters, but I think he's going to be as soon as he can. Doesn't fight a lot of outside of New Zealand either, so maybe he's got to do that before he's going to get that opportunity. Also on the card, light heavyweights Umar Salamov, 18-0, fighting Emil Markic, who is 24-1. As for the vacant WBO International Light Heavyweight title and the IBF East-West Europe Light Heavyweight title. That's a new one. I've not heard of that one. West. Weird. Fight over in Romania for a title, WBA Continental Welterweight title. Flavius Bahia, 11-0, fighting Laszlo Toth, who is 23-2-1 there. Oh, how about this for poor Jesus? Another another one in Spain that's pretty bad. Super welterweights. Jorge Pinilla comes in at 2-0 fighting poor Jesus, who's Jesus Moreno. 0-18. Poor guy. Can't get a win. 0-18. Talk about coming back from the dead. He's going to have to get a win there to save his name, literally. Yes. Christian Late fighting again as well. Just fought last week. Just got his 247th loss. And he's going to be fighting again in United Kingdom. Fighting a guy on his debut at lightweight, Lewis Aitken. Christian comes in at 12-247-8.
Oh my God.
Yikes. And then here's the big one.
Right.
Here's the big one. Out at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Saul Canelo Alvarez coming in at 48-1-1. Of course, we all know who his one loss is to. Against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who's got two losses, both of them fairly recently in his last six fights. He comes in, though, with 50 wins, two losses, and one draw. So very, very even in records. Maybe not so much in competition, but super middleweights.
And here's what I see going into this fight. And, you know, we'll get Tom's crystal ball out there in a second as well. You know, you have Chavez Jr., who's the naturally taller fighter and the naturally heavier fighter. And he's been grinding ever since, you know, he laced up his first pair of gloves as a professional. And sometimes he has a hard time making weight. Sometimes he doesn't exactly train. So now, you know, I heard that his weight has been pretty much on point, you know, for this fight, you know, with the pre-weigh-ins and all that. And the, but once again, from a person that knows how to manipulate the weight, you know, so it's how much stock do you take in that? So with this fight, as I've been looking at it, I just have a feeling, and both fighters have shown the propensity to fatigue in there, but I just think you're going to see a higher work rate out of Canelo. I think there's going to be times where both fighters kind of coast a little bit, but overall, especially as the fight progresses into the later rounds, I just see Canelo outworking them. I don't see any knockdowns. Both fighters have very good chins. I definitely don't see a knockout. The only way of a stoppage I could see is either a guy gets caught, you know, or most likely a cut. But this is a fight that I just see Canelo's working more. I don't think he's going to do what he did against Mayweather and look for the perfect shot and basically sip his hands. I think in this fight, because Chavez will be there to get hit. He's the bigger man, so I think he's going to bring a lot of pressure into the fight. I think, you know, Chavez is going to be the aggressor, and Canelo is going to use better boxing skills, but then in the end, you're going to see him bringing more pressure on Chavez and winning, I'll say, maybe 8-4, maybe 7-5. It'll be a close fight. I'm not going to say it's going to be exactly a great fight, but it'll be entertaining because you got two guys that both have that Mexican pride, and both of them, you know, you have Chavez, whose father was, like, you know, the pride of Mexico for so many years, and he's been kind of shit on for a little bit because he's not his father and he doesn't have his father's, you know, work rate or passion. So, you know, he's going to want to perform, you know, to kind of silence those critics. You have Canelo, who's very popular in his home country. So I think both these guys are going to bring a pretty good effort, you know, because of bragging rights.
And don't forget the animosity between them.
Very true.
If you've seen the sit-down with Max Kellerman, but if you guys haven't seen it, I'm sure it's on YouTube, you know, the HBO thing there with the funny music in the background, you know, like the ominous music there, setting the ambiance. But no, there seems to be a genuine anger out of Canelo, or just like a disgust. And normally, he's an all-business guy. I mean, he's normally not like that. But in this case, he just feels Chavez has set a terrible example with the drug test and the missing weight and this other stuff. But Chavez, I think, is just, he really seems like he's going to be on point for this fight. And that's the giant unknown. Is he going to be in shape? Where is he at mentally? So this is, and I keep getting, I have that feeling, but it's so hard to go against Canelo. It's so hard to do that. I was looking for reasons to, but I can't.
I think it's going to end with Canelo's eyes swollen shut with a second left in the 12th round. No, I'm just kidding.
Seconds,
Yeah, I'm talking about the senior, Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. versus Mildred Taylor. Making a reference there.
Yeah, bring back memories.
Richard Steele's going to be the referee. Anyway, yep. Alvarez versus Chavez, I think, is going to be a great fight because there's so much on the line. I mean, you know, we had a lot of Cinco de Mayo's where the biggest fight was involving Mayweather. In recent years, and now here you got two, you know, purebred Mexican guys here going against each other on this big holiday for them, even though it's the 6th of May instead of the 5th of May. But, you know, it's that weekend. It's a whole weekend for them anyway, and, you know, this is big stuff. And this fight's been brewing for a while, and it's really the best competition these guys can find for each other, so I'm excited about watching this one. Also, we've got a couple other guys who's somebody's always got to go. They both got almost identical records. Joseph Diaz and Manuel Avila. Joseph comes in at 23-0. Avila, 22-0. That one's for the NABF featherweight title. And we got Lucas Matisse back in action since first time in since 2015, October, when he got into fight where somebody went postal on him. Victor Postal, 27-0, knocked him out and put him out of the sport for a little while. Before that, he had lost to Danny Garcia back in 2013, but had strung together three wins after that, two KOs and a majority decision over Ruslan Provodnikov. And now he was pretty hot back then before those two losses. He was looking like unstoppable. And then... he had a bunch of wins strung together before that loss to Danny Garcia as well. Lamont Peterson, Mike Dallas Jr. beat both of them. Josie Olusegun gave him his first loss. Olusegun was undefeated at 30-0 going into that one. Humberto Soto went down with a 58-7-2 record. So Matisse was looking pretty amazing and just kind of lost his rhythm. So we'll see what happens here, but let's hope he's back for good, because he's an entertaining fighter for sure. Also, another guy who's been kind of out of the scene for a while, David Lemieux, 37-3, fighting Marcos Reyes, who is 35-4. And then Ronnie Rios at super bantamweight, 27-1, fighting Daniel Noriega, who is 30 wins, 10 losses, and 1 draw is his record. So that's... it's the big boxing fight of the week. The whole card of the week, basically. Let's see. We also have a bunch of mixed martial arts to talk about. One more big boxing story, though, but it's related to mixed martial arts, so we get a nice transition. We know about Mayweather versus Conor McGregor now. Latest on that is, nothing's been signed, but it's been said that McGregor's going to make $75 million on that fight. McGregor.
Unbelievable.
So,
only in America.
If it happens, we'll see. But it doesn't appear like that will be the only guy that Dana White is going to allow to have a boxing match, because just read this week that Jimmy Manua, I believe we had mentioned his name before as somebody who was in the mix, but it's not being said whether it's going to be on the same card as Mayweather and McGregor, but it does make sense. But Jimmy Manua is trying to get a super fight with David Haye, and basically Manua has been talking to Haye himself. He said, I spoke to him last week when I was in Vegas with Dana White, and Dana liked the numbers. What can be generated through this event? We're planning on making it happen. David Hay is out and about walking. He's back walking now after his injury. We're doing everything we can to make it happen. He, I believe, injured his ankle or something, or foot, in his last fight. But anyway. Possibly in London, but we'll see.
Does Jimmy have any boxing experience?
I do not know. But they do say if that Floyd fight happens in September, it would be too early for David Hay. So maybe this will be a second event. He likely will be ready in November or December. So he says we've got options. Also, another guy coming back, Anthony Pettis, set to make his lightweight return against Jim Miller now at UFC 213. And this is confirmed on yesterday, on Wednesday. That's going to be, again, at the T-Mobile Arena over there in Las Vegas. And it's going to be the main event there is going to be, of course, Garbrandt versus Dillashaw. So, big drama fight there, for sure. Another great episode of The Ultimate Fighter last week, by the way.
Well, did you catch it last night, Rich?
I did not, actually. Totally forgot to watch it this week.
Okay, then we'll have to shut up, because I got a big mouth. Yeah, I'm back to watching it, but as you guys know, I'm terrible with secrets. We won't talk about it.
But anyway, we can talk about the next season, because that's in the news as well. Ultimate Fighter 26 is going to introduce the women's flyweight division, and they will crown a champion again at the conclusion of its season. And basically, we're going to have a casting call May 23rd in Vegas, and it's open to female flyweights between the ages of 21 and 34 with a winning professional record. And it's also going to be open to women currently on the roster who can make 125 pounds during the season. The previously announced tryout for Tough 26 was supposed to include women's strawweights and bantamweights as well as the men's middleweights. But that tryout has been canceled, I guess. So they've streamlined the whole process here. And so the UFC will now, after this season, have three weight classes for the women: bantamweight, strawweight, and featherweight. So we'll see how that goes. Bellator also added about six female fighters this last week as well. So that was in the news. Good stuff there. But the big, big story this week is Anderson Silva pulling a Conor McGregor, saying that he is going to retire from mixed martial arts if the UFC does not grant him an interim middleweight title fight against Yoel Romero in Rio de Janeiro down there in Brazil on June 3rd, where the UFC is going for that fight card. And Silva went on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani and announced this. Said he's still training to fight on June 3rd, even though his original opponent, Kelvin Gastelum, got pulled from the card because of a failed drug test. Silva comes in at 34-8. Romero's 12-1. They both want to fight each other in Brazil, but they only want to fight if an interim title is on the line. And, of course, the current title holder is Michael Bisping, who's expected to defend his title against George St. Pierre next. Although I don't think they have a date set yet for that fight. We'll have to keep our eye on that one. There have been actually calls for them not to do that fight, period. George St. Pierre should have a tune-up fight, basically, a lot of people are saying. But Silva says that whole situation is, he described it as fucking bullshit. So, I guess he's learning some English. says, I'm not going to fight Yoel Romero in Brazil for nothing. Yoel Romero is not going to come to Brazil for nothing. I talked to Yoel's team, and we are on the same page. Let's go fight, but for an interim title, because this makes sense. Dana White came back and said that they've offered Silva several options for opponents, but they do not want to create an interim middleweight title at this time. And White said that on multiple occasions. But Silva's coming off a decision win over Derek Brunson in February. Says he spent money and time on a training camp that might now go to waste if the two sides can't come to an agreement. Said he's always done right by the company, even with the Reebok apparel deal when it affected his sponsorship with Nike. He stepped up for last-minute fights to save events, and now he believes the UFC is failing to do so in return. You know, who could forget how he went up there against Daniel Cormier? I mean, you know, lose-lose situation, and just came up to bat. But he also criticized the decision to book St. Pierre, who hasn't fought since 2013, into an immediate title shot, and claimed that the fight against St. Pierre was once promised to him. He said, when I signed my last contract, Dana and Lorenzo Fertitta said, your first fight will be a super fight with George. Then George came back from retirement and nothing happens. George goes back and fights for the belt. I think I'm done. I fight for a long time in my life and I'm tired. It's very frustrating. Romero is up there in age as well. He's 40 years old. He's widely viewed as the next in line for a title shot, won 8 in a row, and he's repeatedly offered to fight Silva in Brazil for an interim title, and he repeated that offer on Monday. It's a good option, you know, he says. So, maybe the UFC will pull their heads out of their asses and figure that one out, but not looking good for an interim title. But, you know, you'd think that would be such a small detail to allow, you know, to put into motion there. I mean, who are you going to piss off? Michael Bisping? Big deal. Right? Let him get over it. He already pretty much said he was going to fight Romero. I mean, they had this, you know, they had words with each other. So, I don't know. I don't get it. It can't be that hard to figure out. You're going to let your guy retire who is, you know, considered one of the pound-for-pound greatest in the history of the sport because you don't want to put a label on title, interim title. Doesn't make sense to me. Does not make much sense. All right, let's see what we've got in the Google alerts for tonight. Mike Tyson doing some shit.
And he said Mayweather and McGregor would be garbage.
Well, that's not the story I'm clicking on, but I believe it. I believe he said that. But he also said that Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko made boxing big again. And he is putting his money where his mouth is. He says, I'm scared when I'm doing nothing. And he did have the promotional game. I don't know whatever would happen with that. Iron Mike Promotions there. I know it got wrapped up by another company, but I don't know. I haven't been getting any updates on that stuff, so kind of fell off the radar. But he's going to start the Mike Tyson Academy, a boxing fitness franchise, and it's going to have branches in the Middle East, Africa, Europe, and South America. Currently underway with plans and fitness centers in Bahrain, Morocco, the United Arab Emirates, India, and Switzerland. And the Academy headquarters will be located in Las Vegas, of course. His hometown. He was speaking in Dubai when he announced this. He says, I'm scared when I'm doing nothing. If I'm not working, then I'm scared. That's very frightening. I'm working and excited and looking forward to it. And, of course, he's 50 years old now. Tyson at 50. So we'll see how that goes for him. Should be a great fit for a guy like that, though, of course. He's got a lot of experience to pass on. And to talk, of course, about Anthony Joshua being boxing's first billionaire. But, you know, if Mike Tyson's in Dubai, I think there's a better shot of him being a billionaire. They got all the money. I don't know if they still own a piece of the UFC, but they did at one time. I don't believe that agreements with the purchase affected their percentage, though. I think they still got a percentage. I feel like I'm missing a big story. Am I forgetting something? Oh, I did mean to mention, Tony, your little vacation last week from the show. We did it a day early. So how did it go with the draft? I heard you booed Roger Goodell.
Well, I think I might sue the NFL Network. I went down there. I left early Thursday morning because I was going to the Phillies game at 1 o'clock, and so I had to stop at my dentist's office to pay my bill. So of course I stopped in full costume. My picture is now on their website. You know, get down to the game, sat down, had some lunch, hanging out. Good crowd there that day. You know, talking to a lot of people. So. I was gonna jump back on the subway to take the subway to Suburban Station, which is right by where my main office is, the office that I'm only literally ever at like once every few months, at literally 2 days ago. So I'm waiting in McFadden. It's gonna kill some time. Before I was about to jump back on the subway, I bumped into a friend of mine there. Used to work there, and he was part of my Florida trip, not this year, but last year. I see him at WrestleMania party, so I'm hanging out with him. I met his girlfriend, and they're like, hey, why don't you go with us? We're getting an Uber. I said, okay. So I ride up there with them, and, you know, we get to the Ben Franklin Parkway, and they had, I mean, it was just a sea of people and a sea of events. So we get there, and we're walking around, and we're doing photos, and we're meeting people, and I'm bumping into some people I know, and, so now, about maybe 45 minutes before the draft is about to start, my friend Bill gets this idea that he wants to go in the field goal kicking line. So me, him, and his girlfriend Crystal, we decide to go in this line to kick field goals. And I'm fine with that, you know. So we're waiting in line for about an hour where the draft is starting, and the three of us come up. It was dark, so they didn't want you kicking, trying to kick anything far. They're only going to let you go like 20 to 25 yards. And Crystal's like, you go first, so in case we make fools of ourselves. And I'm thinking, first of all, if you're going to make a fool of yourself, you're going to make a fool of yourself, you know, no matter who goes first. And second of all, I'm the one dressed like Apollo freaking Creed. So I get up there, and it's about, like, say, like a 20 to 25 yarder. I'm a straight foot kicker. So the first one I kind of get under a little bit, that goes up. And it just goes over the crossbar. And I'm like, all right, I made a field goal, so I didn't make that much of an ass of myself. I didn't fall. They're like, all right, kick another one. So, same distance. And I put my big left foot into it, and I boom this one. It's straight down the middle, right through. It would have been good for me about 35 yards. And they're like, you made two in a row. Go for a third. Okay. So, I'm about to go for a third. And as I'm lining up, I see these people rushing towards me. I'm like, what's going on here? It's the NFL Network. They want to film me kicking this field goal. And they want to interview me. So now, they're setting lights up. It's kind of dark. People are in the line yelling, like, hey, we got kids that want to kick. And I'm looking at them like, yo, tornado time, so shut your mouth. Yeah, come and give you a backhand. But, you know, I'm keeping my cool. And this woman, Colleen, was like, hey, you're at a football event. Why are you dressed like this? And I just came from the Phillies game. They won today. Down here, I'm having a good time. Philadelphia Eagles, baby, whatever. They're like, you're going for your third field goal in a row. And I said, that's right. And I'm going to boom it. Oh, I put the big left foot into it again. I hit the upright and miss. And then nobody saw the clip. And then I was looking on it online. Then I found that Colleen Wolf's Twitter page had a still photo of us. And the clip, unfortunately, didn't air. But overall, Saturday morning. Now, I'm walking, you know, I'm going to catch the subway, or I'm going to go back to the train station. I'm going to catch the train, just like I used to when I worked down there. And you figure, I left my house at 9:30 in the morning. It's now after 10 o'clock at night, and I'm kind of tired. I've been on my feet all day, and I'm walking to the train station. I'm literally walking past my home office, and I'm thinking, man, if I had to work down here tomorrow, I'd get my bag, log into my building right now, and I'd make a bed on the floor, and I'll walk in tomorrow with the office. When the bosses come out, I'm like, yo, listen. I just slept here last night. I'm working in my Phillies outfit today, so shut the hell up. But I couldn't do that. So I missed one train. I had to wait an hour and 10 minutes for the next. I don't roll into my house until after one. So you figure, now I've been gone something along the lines of like 16 straight hours. Yeah, a little tired. And then I'm getting up in 4 hours to go to work. A little bit rough, but caffeinated myself up, went to the gym and tornado-sized. Now, my friend, and I may have mentioned him on the show a few times, Sunday morning, you know, I'm getting ready, I had Amy coming over to train, so I'm waiting for her, and I was like, I'm waiting for her. My friend called me up at like 9:30 in the morning, very unusual. I'm like, okay, he's calling me up to ask me something, and I kind of had an idea what it was going to be. But I couldn't lay all my cards out. You know, I had to poker face it a little bit. So calls me at 9:30 in the morning, and he goes, listen, hey, I want to talk to you. I said, okay, man, what's up? And he goes, first of all, I saw you on CBS News the other night at the draft. You had your arm around some random girl yelling, go Eagles, NFL Draft 2017. I said, that's bullshit. Not a random girl. I met her 3 hours prior. And then he puts the question to me. He goes, listen. He goes, my son wants to know if you would be his godfather. And I said, of course I will. And I immediately went online and found a Marlon Brando tie that I'm going to wear to the christening. Amazingly, his wife approved it. You know, I got a Marlon Brando godfather tie now. You know, it's going to be classic. Before I finish this, you didn't do what you got to do for this, right? I'm like, I have no clue. Pour water on a kid's head. It's something I know. They're like, oh, no. You got to register. I'm like, register what? They're like, well, you got to prove that you're like a Catholic. I said, okay, I can do that. You know, what do you want to see? My picture of the Pope? Mm-hmm. I want to see the Pope. That's all I think I need. And they're like, that doesn't count. I said, God damn it. I should have worn my Phillies outfit there. The Pope would have stopped his Popemobile. We would have did a papal selfie together, and that would have counted. They're like, I don't think it would have. I'm like, that's nonsense. Then I'm like, well, what about my picture after I did a boxing workout? I was doing the Tim Tebow pose to annoy one of my former trainees. And they said, that doesn't count either. I said, God damn it. Mm-hmm. So now, I'm going to the church that I was baptized 40 years ago, and I'm like, hey, you need a record of my baptism. Well, first of all, my friend goes, you've done all the sacraments, right? And I'm thinking, you know, numbnuts, we went to school together. Yeah, we did them all together. You know? So I'm like, yeah, I did all the sacraments except for the last rites. Haven't done that yet. And then someone's like, well, you didn't do the sacrament of marriage either. I said, yeah. Didn't I just say I didn't do the last rites? So I called them one church and I'm like, yeah, I think I need to register, and then they're asking me all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, no problem. Someone's like, do you have to go to confession? I said, shit. I said, the baptism's in 7 weeks, we wouldn't be done in time. I would just pull up the list of commandments and say, take out murder, and I've done all the rest.
Oh no. Bad.
I think I got it all managed. So I think we're on point. So I'm going to be the child, godfather, and trainer.
All right.
Now, Tony, why was the crowd booing Roger Goodell so much?
That was all Tony.
Yeah, well, first of all, you can say, Tony, why were you booing Roger Goodell so much?
You know, because I don't watch that stuff normally, but I made an exception because of you.
and I couldn't, and it didn't dawn on me it was on for a while. I was a little, my mind was off a little bit, but, so I tuned in, and man, Goodell was just catching hell. I mean, it was just,
I think the Tom Brady fan club was in the house or something. I don't know.
We're going to use the cliche. This is Philadelphia. They threw snowballs at Santa Claus back almost 50 years ago. That's the easiest one to do. But yeah, I think it was just a trendy thing to do, and we boo, and he was there, so we booed.
Not a very likable guy, I guess. I don't know. He's got an iron hold on that league.
It was definitely an event to be at. I was glad I was there. I enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Rich, you know what? I got to send Joe, and I got to see if I can get it uploaded to YouTube. I got to see if I can. Well, first thing I got to do is I got to download the clip, and then I got to upload to YouTube because it's not my clip. But I don't know if you saw my Facebook page. I definitely want to get it uploaded on YouTube so I can send it to Tom. Did you guys see the video of my latest trainee on the punch mitts last week?
I don't believe I did.
Yeah, you got to get that to me.
Tom, it's devastating. I mean, you want to talk about an intimidating character? Scary. Scary. I mean, I was holding the mitts and I was fearing for my life.
I got to see this.
I mean, she's a lot tougher than her 5-year-old, blonde pigtails look, too.
I knew it was going to be a kid.
When Amy came over last week, she brought her daughter, and her daughter loves to come over to my house, because it's like, you know, downstairs in the gym is also like a child's playroom, because, you know, I'm basically a big child, and I got, you know, the air hockey down there and all that stuff, and she'll do this and do that, then she picks up the medicine ball, and then I have one of those foam workout things where you bounce and it comes up with a different workout to do, and she loved that. So I had her hitting the speed bag one time, and then last week, cause I have a little pair of gloves I let her wear, I got down on my knees and I was holding the mitts. I was teaching her how to do a 1-2, and I did it really easy. I said, I pointed to her left hand, I said, this is your 1, and I touched her right hand, I said, this is your 2, I said, do 1-2, and she would do left right. And the one of them, she snapped pretty good. I was like, that was actually pretty impressive. It's on my Facebook, so Rich, I'll share it to you. And then see if I can get it downloaded. Download to upload.
Is she as devastating as the little girl boxing champ video that I have on my YouTube that I stole from somebody? Remember that one?
On your first lesson, you got to cut it.
Speaking of first lesson, I don't know if you guys seen this, but there was a big viral video this week that was sweeping the world, and I believe it was from China. It was a mixed martial arts fighter versus a Tai Chi master, supposed master, I guess you could say, because he got a lot of criticism for being a fraud afterwards. He pretty much
That didn't go too well for the master, did it?
When the guy was like trying to say he could like put a shield in front of his punches or something?
Probably. It makes
no,
sense.
No, I don't think that was a fight.
Now all kinds of kung fu masters are challenging the same guy, and we'll see. But the Tai Chi did not do a damn thing for him. He didn't even throw a strike. He just got stricken. Whatever.
Yeah, that's gotta be awesome. And you know, there was a guy going back to the UFC 7 in Buffalo back in 95, and this guy was just had karate. That's all he had, no ground game, but he assured his students in his school he had secret breathing techniques and he could not be choked out. Well, guess how that went.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, so the master took a snooze. I mean, how awful to have to, I mean, when you specifically say something like that, I mean, what an idiot he had to feel like. Wonder what his students thought.
Right. Unbelievable. All right, well, I think that's it for us. I don't really have anything left. Unless you guys got an addition to the broadcast.
I don't. I'll see what I can do on the video. Rich, what I'll do tonight is I'll tag you in the video so you can see it, and then I'll see if I can get it
to my YouTube page. That way I can share it with Tom. You know, it's a cute little video. And like I said, I think they're both coming over tomorrow night, so I'll train them. I got my other trainee, Matt. He's coming back on Tuesday. And then what I'm working on, and I talked to Hank about this last week, Hank Cisco, what I'd like to do is another guy that has expressed some interest in training with me is the youngest judge in the state of Pennsylvania, and he's at a lot of these dinners I go to. So I always talk to him a lot, nice enough guy. Like I said, very young, and he wants to start training with me. So I'd like to arrange is maybe one Sunday have Matt, a.k.a. Potato Head, Amy, a.k.a. Hollywood, and this guy, Judge Scott, who I haven't given a name to yet, but maybe I'll call him, like, Judge Wynn or something.
How about Judge Dredd?
Judge Dredd, I love it. Yeah, there you go. But maybe I'll do, like, one Sunday where I have those three over, and then I'll have Hank come over to kind of be, like, you know, our ambassador of the workout, and then I'm going to video clips of it. Because the way I would do is I would do a circuit training. Basically, my basement gym, I don't have a whole lot of room, but I have heavy bags set up in one section, have a speed bag over in another section, and then in between that, I have the area where I work the pads. So you say, round one, you know, Amy's doing the speed bag, Judge Dredd is doing the pads, Potato Head's doing the bag. And then they shift to the next round, and you know, and then they each have three rounds on each circuit. You know, just in a rotation, and then film clips of that. And Hank can pop in, you know, MC it a little bit, give some advice. Maybe I'll get a gong where he can ring it like the bell. Video clips of that, and then I'll edit it all into one, maybe like 30-minute instructional boxing video.
There you go. And then you can send it to Mike Tyson, and you can open the Philadelphia branch of his boxing clinic.
There you go. How funny would that be?
That would be cool. Another story. Real quick.
I know a whole lot of things, but I know something about fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone. Also, welterweight fight set for UFC 213. I just caught that one. And it's going to be July 8th in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. So they were targeting the bout. It's been in the works, but it's now official. Lawler has not fought in a long time since his knockout loss to Tyron Woodley. And he's coming in with a record of 27-11. 32-8 is Cerrone's record. And he just... had a couple back and forth bouts. You got win over Matt Brown at UFC 206 in December, then TKO lost to Jorge Masvidal in January in Denver. And he's 4-1 since moving up to welterweight. And as we mentioned earlier, Jim Miller will be taking on Anthony Pettis at the same event. And they've also finalized a bout agreement for heavyweight fight between Fabricio Werdum and Alistair Overeem. Verdum coming in at 21-6-1, Overeem 42-15. So there we have it. That's all she wrote for us this week, and until next week, that's all we got, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys, we'll do it next week, and let's enjoy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
Yeah.
I should be partying with my girlfriend's best friend, who's actually born on Cinco de Mayo, but unfortunately I got work to do here in New Hampshire, so I'm going to miss all the main festivities. I'll be watching boxing, so I'll be happy.
Well, hopefully this weekend turns out to be a good fight weekend, and, get more
fun.
All right. All right, guys. Next week.
Adios, fellas.